The following podcast is a proud member of the Miniatures Wargaming Union. For the latest wargaming news and other podcasts, check out mwunion.com. Everybody, welcome to the Draw Podcast. You're tuning into episode 43 for Friday, April 25th, 2008. I am your host, Steve Boyce, and joining me in the Draw Podcast today is Chris Weigel.
How's it going, everyone?
All right, so we are a bit delayed on the episode. I know. We hear it all the time. And we're sorry, because we had a few things that we were working on, and again, you know, life in general was catching up with us. But it was kind of for the best of it. Last time we delayed our episode because we were working on the Warhammer 25th Anniversary Retrospective, which is now on the website, and you can check it out. And wow, like, what a really awesome response we were getting from that. A lot of the people were really digging it, and that's really good. So a lot of work went into it. And the reason why we delayed last episode is because we also aired it on the show as well. And that's what we're doing for this one, for this episode. So, again, this one was delayed because we now have part two of the Warhammer 25th Anniversary Retrospective. Again, this will air at the end of the show. So, it's going to be a little bit shorter episode, but, you know, when you get to the end, that's going to play. So, that's why these episodes are kind of off lately, is because of that. So, let's start getting into what's going to be featured in this episode. So in today's episode, we got news from the front lines. Not too much going on in the world of Games Workshop, but we still got some stuff to cover. Next up is Unit of the Show. We're going to be talking about the Dark Eldar Warriors. Cover some of that, of the Dark Eldar. And then we're going to hop right into some listener feedback, and then moving on to the part two of the retrospective at the end of the show. So, without further ado, let's dig right into things and start off with news from the front lines. Okay, so, for this short amount of news that we have, probably one of the bigger updates we have is the new Lord of the Ring sneak peeks that were put up on the Games Workshop site. So, Chris, what was GW showing off of the new stuff?
GW showing off what appears to be a new army range. They have the Black Numenoreans? I don't know.
Numenoreans, I believe?
Numenoreans.
Sorry, don't hate us if we pronounce that wrong.
Yeah. the Morgul Knight. The Shadow Lord, as well as the Moran Orc Captain and the Mordor Orc Captain.
So I'm actually really liking the Morgul Knights. They're really good looking. Again, you know, Lord of the Rings lately hasn't been, or not lately, but in general hasn't been, you know, the standout jaw drop looking miniatures that Games Workshop has produced. But they're still pretty good. And the Morgul Knights are kind of like I'm sorry, I'm not too much into Lord of the Rings, so I don't know the whole backstory of them or anything, but they kind of look like, you know, like almost like the Witch King, if he was you know, like if an army was based off his looks.
Yeah, the Shadow Lord looks a lot like him. I really like the one that not the one that's on foot. I mean, he's just kind of standing there like, I rule.
Yeah,
got bubbles. I am He Man. You just can't see my face.
That is quite true. Again, it's I don't know. It's just something about the Lord of the Rings range. I guess it's kind of like their B team that's working on them. But again, they're decent miniatures still.
Well, also I think the fact that well, most of the things in Lord of the Rings haven't really been depicted in pictures, so they're really trying to or not much more recent pictures. I mean, the original Lord of the Rings game, you had to kind of base it off the movies. And the problem is, basing it off the book, you kind of have to keep everything accurate. Otherwise, people are really going to get on it. So the amount of detail on them or stuff may lack due to the lack of information they have.
Well, see, I don't think it's really that. I just find that everything with them seems to be pretty, like, sharp, like lots of sharp edges and sharp points and stuff like that on the models. Like, I'm looking at the Shadow Lord and looking at the horse, and seems to have a lot of sharp points on the actual, like, skin. Like, they show some of the veins, and they're very sharp. They're not, doesn't blend very well into the horse and some other points of it. But, again, that's kind of nitpicking about it. And, Lord of the Rings is a different scale. But, again, still pretty decent. And we know that it is a separate team that does it. It's not, obviously, not GW's best because they have them working on, you know, Project X or whatever army revision or model revision they're doing. Or
Planet Strike.
Planet Strike, yeah, whatever they're working on next.
Whatever the next leak campaign is.
Yeah, we'll see. But I got pretty decent miniatures. I do, like I said, I do like the Morgul Knights. I like that look. So are these guys a new army, or I haven't heard too much about them?
I think they are a new army. The only thing that we've really heard about them is the preview pictures. So I would assume that relatively soon there'll be like preview articles of them.
Gotcha.
Because also it follows the order, because they usually go Warhammer Fantasy, Warhammer 40K, Lord of the Rings, and then Fantasy 40K, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
There was a fantasy army, the Mahud, or not Mahud. I know they were involved in there.
Oh, yeah, those... I know what you're talking about.
I don't remember the army name off the top of my head.
I think it was Mahud, wasn't it? The guy...
The Harad.
Oh, the Harad, that's right.
They came, and then now is the demons for 40K and fantasy. So that kind of took out both slots right there in one shot.
Yeah.
So, and now back to Lord of the Rings. So if people are asking, you know, didn't we just get a new Lord of the Rings army? Well, we did, but it's the fact that
demons took them up really quickly.
Yeah, demons took up two of the three in the order, so I keep going with the round robins.
So what? No demons for Lord of the Rings? Come on, Balrog led army or whatever is. Why not? Feels like
they'll make something up.
I'm pretty sure that's kind of what the role they're on now. They're just making anything for Lord of the Rings because they're slowly running out of material. I find, at least.
I think it's based on the. Like on the other books, like the History of Middle Earth and stuff like that, and all the books that his son Chris Tolkien, I think it's his son, has really written about. You know, the History of Middle Earth, the War of the Ring, stuff like that.
Yeah,
where he kind of introduced a bunch of new things. I guess he could just make anything up if he felt like it. Games Workshop, we need new material. All right, how about this? This is the concept. Ooh, we're liking it. We're running with it.
Yeah, I guess like a big round table discussion, GW about this. Alright, so also for Lord of the Rings, we got just one more smaller update, and that is some some new 25th anniversary specials that are happening on the US Games Workshop store. So Chris, run down what's coming out, or what's out, or what's up for advance order.
Well, right now, that's currently out, they have Warhammer 25th Anniversary t-shirts. They're pretty nice. They have the, as you've seen, the red shield with the 25 on it, and that giant hammer behind it. You know, it's kind of been like the whole 25th anniversary official signia, I guess you would call it.
Yes.
The shirts are available.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the shirts are available in large, extra large, extra, extra large, and extra, extra, extra large.
And also
extra, 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 extra large. And I'm not kidding about that. They're all $20.
Yep.
U.S. currency.
Yeah.
Also, they have the limited edition 25th anniversary rulebook, which is $175. It's very nice. It's pretty nice looking. I wouldn't spend $175 on it.
No, also, but it's If you
Also,
had if you're a rich guy and you have money to blow, then yeah, sure, why not? But
or if you're really into collector's editions or something like that.
Is there really such a thing as, you know, a gamer in the Games Workshop universe that is rich and can afford all this? Pretty much all of us all have a budget. I guess there's some, but
we've probably all blown it on our miniatures.
Yeah, probably. Take out a mortgage just to build off that new army you always wanted.
Yeah. 10,000 points of wood elves.
Oh.
Imagine. Have like 9 dragon lords. Anyway.
It'd be worth it, I suppose. Just try to explain it to the bank.
Yeah, exactly. Take out a college loan. Mm. Yeah, I went to college. Right. Anyway, yeah. There's also the 25th anniversary special cases, which there's a case for each army. They all vary in price. I think they all have from what I heard, about 1,000 points of minis in it.
Sure.
I don't know if that's accurate, but
I don't think. Well, yeah. Now that probably
a lot of the so it's, as I said, the price varies between them. It really depends on what you get in it. Also remember, you also have to remember that some armies have higher costs than others, like the Ogre Kingdom. You get a butcher, 2 hunters, and 30 nobbler trappers. Mm. Yet, if you go to someone like, Skaven, because they're right here, right there, there they are. You get 1 Grey Seer, 40 Clan Rats, full command, 40 Plague Monks, 10 Poison Wind Globe Barters.
Globadiers,
that's it. 10 Plague Censor Bearers, 1 Rattling Gun, 2 Rat Ogres, 3 Skaven Packmasters, and 6 Giant Rats. Apparently, I don't know Skaven all that well, but apparently that's about the same as, you know, as the rest. Apparently they all have the same value,
yeah,
point-wise.
I'm looking at this now. I'm looking at the Lizardman one, and you get 1 Carnosaur, 6 Coldwon Riders, 10 Pterodons, 3 Salamanders, and a Stegodon.
Yeah, there's ones like the Bretonnian one where you get 1 hero, 1 Pegasus.
Yeah, I see. That's the Royal Air Force right there. Yeah. 1 hero on Pegasus and 10 Pegasus Knights. Yeah, that's a Bretonnian Royal Air Force coming in right there.
Yeah.
As deadly as that is. Oh, man.
Yeah, that could...
As much as I love Pegasus Knights, that's I think that's pretty cheesy for anyone to have in an army.
It'd just be... that'd probably be smart, because it'd be too much of a pain in the ass to shoot everything up in the air.
What is that? And you'd just be a straight-up asshole for having all that.
That's true.
Seriously. Come
and
on.
If you play that, don't stop tuning into the show, because we said that. That's just Steve's opinion, and my opinion.
Yeah.
Steve thinks differently.
And I think that's pretty cheesy, though. It kind of is, you know. Like,
there's some ways you play games out there where there, it's just like that's cheesy. There's no way you can beat it.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
Like I have 3 Pegasus Knights in my Bretonnian army, and just the fact that the 3 alone, you know, were able to deal a mass amount of damage. Just think what 10 Pegasus Knights can do.
Like, I know someone who in a 2,000 point. Or is it it might be high. I think it's higher than 2,000 points. He in his ogre army, he plays like 4 butchers.
No.
And it's like everything casts on 3+.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of just like, all right. He plays like 1 squad of bulls, and then the rest are like iron guts.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right. How do you expect me to win this battle with skeletons and ghouls?
Yeah.
It's like, there's no way. It's not going to work.
So, yeah,
it's like, you could throw that Royal Air Force at him and it won't do anything.
Yeah. I'm liking this Chaos one, except for the fact that you get... The fact you get 1 of each Chaos Lord. You have 1 Khorne Lord, Nurgle Lord, Sunnish Lord, and Zinch Lord, sorry. And 30 Chaos Knights.
That's also douchebag.
Yeah. That's, Yeah, but again,
a lot of these just seem like if you really want to be a douchebag to everyone else. Because, like, you get this Beast of Chaos where you get a Doom Bull, 10 Marauders with additional hand weapons, and 10 Marauders with great weapons.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, the Tomb Kings where you get two Tomb Scorpions, excuse me, 3 Bone Giants, and 10 Shrub.
The Ushapti, yeah.
Yeah, Ushapti.
And the Ushapti are really good, too. They're the equivalent of a Kroxgore or Rat Ogre for any army, and 10 of them. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So I guess you can call these all cheesy if you want to.
Yeah, they all are cheesy.
Except for...
Like, I'm looking, even the Wood Elf one. You get a hero...
Except for the Ogre one, which I see 1 Butcher, 2 Hunters, and 30 Noblars. Is that the same?
Yeah.
Okay, Noblars, whatever. Lizardman one, 10 Pterodons. Okay, you know, Pterodons are... Sweet, but you know, it's not too bad. Tomb Kings.
The Wood Elves is pretty bad. You get a hero on Stag. You get 10 Wild Riders with full command, and
yeah.
I play. And if you play Wood Elves or play against them, you will know that they are a pain in the ass when they get into combat.
Mm.
5 Treecken and a Great Eagle.
Yeah,
Treecken are basically like the Usabi or the. What's it called? Or the
yeah, it's kind of the equivalent. It's kind of like the large elite unit
in between like the super big rare giant unit and the what's it called in their basic unit.
Yeah,
and then like the high elf one, you get a Lord on Dragon, a White Lion Chariot, 20 Phoenix Guard with full command, 20 White Lions with full command.
Nice.
Like how do you expect to take that down? You don't.
With
4 cannon.
Well, just buy another box at the counter that, because apparently any of these boxes can counter each other. But yeah, anyway, that's these are all the specialists. You are paying the price for them, though. Like we're listening, the most expensive one was the Hordes of Chaos one. 330 bones for that bad boy there, if you want them 30 Chaos Knights. I think that was the most expensive one. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And then the cheapest one is the Bretonians with the 11 Pegasuses for 100.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And actually,
that's
I don't
mind.
I don't mind the Lizard one either. 275, considering they're all you know metal miniatures.
The Dark Elves one is pretty good. It's a hero on Cold One, a sorceress on Cold One, 1 sorceress on foot, 15 Cold One Knights, and 2 Cold One Chariots for 185.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't that bad, but you get a ton of cavalry. These are really, like, some of these armies are, like, really the big hitters in the army, and other of them are just, like, all cavalry.
Yeah. Yeah, there seems, everyone seems to have their cavalry, but cavalry's good.
Cavalry is good.
Yep.
They help. Somewhat.
Yeah.
Also, for 25th anniversary, there is a 25th anniversary figure case, which is the same as the normal figure cases, as some of you know, there's a figure case, but there's also the army case. The army case is twice as big,
mm-hmm.
For about $90, and I actually just bought an extra one. The figure case carries. It's got three trays of foam, and it's about in it, as well as the case, and it's $50. The 25th anniversary one is basically it's the smaller one with just 3 trays. But it's painted silver and it has the 25-year insignia kind of molded on there.
Mm.
So it's nice looking. I'm not going to say it's not nice looking because it is. It is nice looking.
It is. Nice silver.
And it's the same price as a normal one. So if you want to feel special, like if all your friends have black army cases or...
What about the silver special edition?
Boom, silver one in your face.
Yeah,
I'm better than you. Just don't do too much trash talking just in case you get absolutely manhandled.
True enough.
Yeah. Also, for the last thing here, on Saturday, April 26th, and Sunday, April 27th, the only 2 days you can order Harry the Hammer model.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely awesome looking mini.
And he's awesome in general. They released his stats in whole. He's good.
Yeah, he'll do quite a bit of damage.
Yes.
But yet they're the only 2 days you can get them. I know some of the hobby shops around me are ordering them, a couple of them in bulk,
mm-hmm.
just to sell. I don't know the exact price of him. Oh wait, Yeah, it doesn't say the exact price. There's only about 290 left.
Yeah.
So you really have to hit refresh at midnight to get one.
I am extremely tempted to buy that miniature.
Yeah.
He's this really awesome looking model. And he's based, if you don't know who Harry the Hammer is, in the first edition Warhammer rulebook, which, in case you don't know, check out our retrospective and you can find out all the information about that. But anyway, yeah, like he's on the front there's a I'm not sure, I believe he's Empire Warrior, because, well, human warrior, at least on the cover. And then I think it was somewhere on the inside there's a Chaos Warrior as well, and the Chaos Warrior was Harry the Hammer. And again, the model is representative of the actual art piece, and you just see him on a mound of bodies, or zombies in this case. And
And he has a giant hammer.
yeah, he has the giant hammer, hence the name Harry the Hammer. So no one screws with Harry the Hammer.
No. Oh, God, no.
Oh yeah, so it is tempting to buy again a very limited model. So if you're into collecting, or you want a sweet Chaos Lord for your army or whatnot, he would probably be the way to go.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, all right. So that about does it for news. Again, very, very slow week, or 2 weeks, or we're so delayed. It's been a while. So, not excuse me, not too much has been going on. But we still manage. So right now we are going to move on to our next segment, and that is the unit of the show. All right, so in this episode we are going to be talking about the Dark Eldar Warriors. Dark Eldar is not a race that is usually played a lot. There's not a lot of people to go out and play the Dark Eldar, and maybe to the fact about Games Workshop not doing a lot of updates for them, or releasing new miniatures, or a book.
Yeah,
But
that happened.
yeah, that might be a problem as well. But again, there was also rumor flying around that, and well, actually, it is rumor, but there's also been some leaked pictures of some sculpts of some new Dark Eldar
Think it was
miniatures
the
coming out.
homunculus, right?
No, that was actually confirmed to be an old miniature.
Okay.
But the one that was confirmed was the it wasn't a finished model, but it looked like an Eldar on a jet bike. But apparently it was, I forget, I want to say, wasn't sure if it was a Dark Eldar Lord or whatnot, or on a unfinished Reaver jet bike. So it looked Eldarish, but it wasn't finished yet. So apparently that was the only confirmed miniature. But again, this is all rumor. No final word yet, but we'll find out soon enough.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, the Dark Eldar are they're actually a pretty good race, and I've had my share of playing against them, and I had my share of victories and definitely losses against them. But anyway, so I thought it'd be kind of neat to talk about them in this episode. So, Chris, why don't you read off some of the, some story about the Dark Eldar?
Sure, no problem. The Dark Elder Warrior. At the core of the army, the Dark Elder Warrior attacks rapidly, killing or crippling those who oppose him, toying with the enemies using a variety of blades and toxins to induce them into an agonizing pain, leaving them unable to fight no further. Then they drag off any survivors back to Kamara, to be tortured and killed at leisure. Very much of the same twisted minds as Slaanesh, Dark Eldar gain pleasure from watching their enemies suffer from pain.
Yes.
Seems
Yeah, they're all into the sharpness. They do like their
kind
blades, they
of
like their needles, their emo-ness, I guess. But anyway, yeah, that pretty much describes the Dark Elder Warriors. That's what they do. They like to mess around, maybe rip up your flesh a bit, make you feel the pain, and then eventually kill you. Because they're very, very cruel like that.
They're like little... They kind of like are little annoying children. You know when you... You know if you... If you're at like a family reunion or something like that, and there's like five little kids just like toying with you, you know, stealing your glass or stealing something off your plate or playing like Ring Around the Rosie with you and annoying you and hitting you with a wiffle ball bat, that's kind of what they do. Except the Dark Elder will kill you afterwards. Am I the only one who's had that experience?
I've never had that experience. I have.
I've had like five little cousins. They came up to me and whacked me with wiffle ball bats or something.
Yeah, congratulations. That is wow. Never experienced that, I could say. Moving on. all right, so we got some pros and cons for Dark Eldar. So we're going to start off with some of the pros. Speed. Dark Eldar are a very, very fast army. Very much like the Eldar. They move fast. Every unit moves fast. They do have the fleet of foot ability and can get into combat very quickly. And also a lot of fast units. Every single one of their vehicles is a skimmer, again, like the Eldar. So they are very, very fast around the battlefield. Fantastic in close combat. This is where the Dark Eldar really, really shine. Because this is where the army is developed around. That's kind of their base. We'll get into some of the ranged weaponry stuff in just a minute, but everything they have, especially like even the warriors. We're mainly talking about the warriors here, but they have the initiative of six, striking combat very quickly, faster than most even elite units of other armies. So, again, that's their purpose is to get into combat. Great special ranged weapons. Even though it is limited to their weapons, the ones that they can upgrade to are very good. And this is including splinter cannons, which are very nice weapons. Assault 4 weaponry, I believe it was range 24. And so they are able to... You can do your movement with the Dark Elder Warriors and then fire off your splinter... Splinter rifles, which they're alright. I believe they're range 12. They're not powerful at all. And then you get into your splinter cannons, which are range 24, strength 4, AP 5, assault 4. I'm sorry if I messed up the strength and AP wrong. I think that's what they are. But again, and then having multiple of those, especially in your army, it's they do hurt a lot. I believe it's up to 2 per squad. Again, could be mistaken on that. And then other weapons as well, like the Dark Lances. And Dark Lances, again, exactly the same as the Eldar Bright Lances. Very strong weapon. It was strength 8, range 36. And what it does, what's really neat, is it, regardless of the armor value of any vehicle, so you may have like the prettiest Land Raider out there, with your armor 14 all around, you whip out a Dark Lance, and it automatically brings your armor value down to 12, regardless. So, you know, whatever you have, it'll bring it down to 12, unless it's less than that, then you deal it as normal. But, so, again, it hurts anything.
If you play Guard, who you're playing a Baneblade, ooh.
Oh, yeah. And you get a few Dark Lances on that sucker, you're looking at armor 12... On the front, yeah, you might wanna watch out with that. Again, and you can have this within your basic basic Dark Elder Warrior units. So it is nice that you can have the very nice assault weapon of the splinter cannon, which I say is a must for any unit. And then depending on who you're fighting, throwing in a Dark Lance, it's gonna kill off infantry fairly quickly. Because it's so powerful, but again, it's really meant for armor. Taking out the heavy armored vehicles is where it's at. And probably one of the last things about the Dark Elder is the mass numbers. Because the point cost is so cheap for them, you can mass amounts of warriors or other units. And this is where the Dark Elder come into play. Again, much like the Eldar and Imperial Guard, they're highly infantry-based, They do have their vehicles and such, but again, you need the core infantry for the army, and this is where the Dark Elder need to mass up. Having lots and lots of warriors, throwing in those splinter cannons in there, getting, you know, let's say eight shots per squad, regardless of how many squads you have, just think of how many shots you're getting just from that alone. So it does add up pretty quickly. Or throw in some of those Dark Lances and finding a very armored Space Marine or Imperial Guard Army. Yeah, it does help a lot. And again, though they are low point costs, they're really kind of the meat shield of the army. But the nice high initiative does help. So give them the combat, lock them up, and then get whatever else you have to your special units to help deal in the last of the damage and the final blows. So that's where that comes into play. For cons, one of the major disadvantages is the low armor. Again, like at Eldar, they're very low in the armor saves, and especially with their vehicles as well. You're looking at nothing high. The only units like the Vect, which are very powerful and have armor 14 all around, but then you just get in some of the other units like Raiders or Ravengers, and just very low armored value. Don't expect them to last too long, or like Talos, stuff like that. Other than that, the limited range weaponry are another big hit to the Dark Eldar. Basic weaponry only has a 12-inch range, and then you're looking at special weapons like the splinter cannons, which pump it up to 24 inches. Even beyond that, Dark Lances, I believe, are the longest range weapon. And that was, yeah, I want to say 36 inches on that, but could be mistaken.
I think it's the same as the Bright Lance, and I'm pretty sure Bright Lance is 36. I don't know.
So again, like, you're not building a ranged army out of the Dark Elder. They are very limited when it comes to that. So that's a big hit on the Dark Elder. And then the last con, and it is quite true throughout the Dark Eldar, is that there's too much reliance on special units. Even though you can mass up on your infantry and such, there's too much reliance on, let's say, the Archon with his regiment of incubi, and that's it happens too often with it. And I have witnessed this myself. I've played against Dark Eldar for many years, and that's one thing where it always comes down to. It's the army is always there, kind of fires down, softens up the army, and then here comes the Archon with his incubi to kind of go in, clean up the mess, sort of deal. Like, that's the hard-hitting unit. There's also the witches and stuff too, but that's the one problem. It's just the warriors are not strong enough to hold up their own. And even though with the high initiative and stuff, they can lock up in combat, you're going to need the backup support of other units to save your warriors, or if you do want to save them. So that's the big con about the warriors, is that they can't really hold their own for too long. So kind of watch out on that and kind of think ahead of time how things are going to work out.
Yeah, so. I just thought of another pro, the fact that they do a nice combination with the Raiders.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
The transport, they have a very nice combination. The fact that it doesn't really it has a lot of access points. I don't know if it's a really access points, but or what they really consider them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know the Dark Elder Warriors can get shots out of that.
Yeah, that's
pretty frequently. So you can get them up there. You can move them around. They're much more versatile that way.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
So just a quick tactica here. The Dark Eldar are similar to their Eldar counterpart for the gist of it. Even though it is lacking a bit more in the ranged weaponry, the Dark Eldar make up for it for a loss. Make up for that loss with close combat. A variety of close combat upgrades and just general skill. Like I said, the high initiative of the warriors themselves do help out a lot in combat. The warriors are quick to strike and also can deal heavy damage to a unit because they are so fast. The basic range weaponry of the splinter rifles are subpar at best. Again, they don't compare to anything of other armies. It's just like the shuriken cannons of the Eldar. And also given that the added upgrades to the weapons are much more superior, such as Splinter Cannons and, again, Dark Lances, they really beef up a squad pretty quickly. Pretty much the moral of the story is that the warriors are designed to be in combat, more or less to lock up the enemy or to, you know, soften them up. Throw in your warriors. You'll definitely take out infantry. You'll definitely do damage with the warriors. That's guaranteed. But again, you throw them into a hard-hitting unit or whatnot, they're just there to lock them up while your hard-hitting units come in to clean up the mess. Moving quickly towards the enemy as well, and having weapons like the Splinter Cannons, which can be fired on upon the move if you don't do the fleet of foot. So again, move, then fire off your Splinter Cannons on nice, get off a quick four shots, then move again, fire, move, fire, or if you're out of range, move, fleet of foot. You can get them in there fairly quickly. So we actually got a listener tip. So Chris, you want to read that off?
Sure. This listener's tip is from Chris Sanchez. The Dark Elder Warriors, they are deadly and fast, dishing out way more than they are worth. Though they are very fragile, if played right, they can lay down a spray of fire from their powerful splinter weapons. With the ability to add some very powerful assault weapons, such as the blaster or shredder, and the mighty splinter cannon. If having a 10-man squad with two blasters and two splinter cannons, making the squad only cost 110 points, they are highly effective at running around your enemies. Ballistic skill 4 and 8 shots with splinter cannons give you a great anti-horde ability, wiping out Nids, Orcs, Guardsmen, and Eldar with ease. 2 strength 8 AP 2 blast shots will make Terminators easy prey. With weapon skill 4, they have the ability to hold off in close combat, so if they get caught by some lucky orc or by the swift cousins, the Eldar, they can hold. This also gives the warriors a chance to live if they ever find themselves outgunned. I have faced certain death many times when the line of fire of guard would have wiped them out. Fleet of foot gives them that headstrong, tie them up, or if you're close enough, your assault weapons can knock them silly. Warriors are highly skilled and cheap. Lots of small, well-armed squads can dominate the battlefield to overwhelm your foe. Though usually used as a support unit to the highly elite forces of the other Dark Eldar, they can hold their own and be fielded with many roles. A must-have in the army. I myself have fielded 4 10-man squads in a 1,000-point army.
So again, it is kind of going back to the special weaponry, again, like the Splinter Cannon, stuff like that, and then going for the upgrades for close combat because this is where they're needed. Again, like Chris was saying, in his email here,
Both Chris's.
both Chris's, should I say.
Sorry.
it is really needed. You do need to go for the upgrades because it's just without them, they're just not going to be that effective. They're just basically meat shields without anything. So again, thanks to Christopher for writing that in. That's it for the Dark Eldar. Hope you enjoy that. On the next episode, we talk about the Fantasy Skaven Knight Runners. So have any tips or tricks on this unit, be sure to send them into mwunion@gmail.com. Moving on right now, we are going to skip right on to our listener feedback. We've just got just going to do a few questions here before the end of the show. I know, guys, this is a bit of a shorter show. We're sorry about that.
We have the retrospective,
But
and
we got the
that's
retrospective we'll be
a lot of
throwing in
fun.
the end because, like I said, it's been taking a long time to get this done, and we don't have that much time right now. And we're lucky we were able to get together today to put together this episode. Let's just read through these questions real quick. Chris, you want to read out the first one for us?
Hey, Drop Podcast. This question is geared towards Steve. As being a Lizardmen player yourself, I need your opinion. My list is pretty much complete, but I'm having a hard time deciding on certain core units. As cool as the Temple Guard are they worth taking as a core unit or over core unit over the sources if I do not have a Slan in my army? Also, what are your thoughts on jungle swarms? Jason, call up.
All right. Thank you for writing in. The Temple Guard. Wow, they are a really good unit. I do like the Temple Guard a lot. And they do their job really well. But picking them, their main job is basically the bodyguards of the Slan Mage Priest. That's what they do. You're supposed to, as the cliche way of doing it is throwing the Slan in the middle, then having your Temple Guard around him as the barrier to as a defense. For the point cost difference and what you're getting, I'd say probably just stick with your Saurus Warriors. Again, Sauruses are badass on their own already without the Temple Guard. And just for what you're paying for the extra points, if you don't have the Slan in your army, that's really the main benefit of the Temple Guard is to be the protector of the Slan. But again, you know, don't just take my word for it. Do some play testing on that because, like I said, they are really good, and it's really hard to say. It depends on what else you have in your army. If you have very few Saurus units, I would just take more Saurus Warriors. But upon that, like I said, do some playtesting, see what you have, and see how it works out for you. If you find the Temple Guard to be a little bit more effective, personally, I would say just stick with the Saurus Warriors. Even though I do think the Temple Guard are really good.
But would it be effective to even have just like one squad of Temple Guard, like a squad of 15 or something like that?
Oh
would
yeah,
that
be like effective, or? They are definitely effective, and I have absolutely nothing against them. But I'm just saying for what you're paying for the extra points for the Temple Guard, I'm actually just going to open my book here just to check this out. But again, just for what you're paying for the difference here, like you're paying an extra 5 points for one more weapon skill and one more initiative. So that's really about it. Though... Yeah, that's not too bad of a trade-off. I'd probably say just stick with the Saurus Warriors because those 5 points add up fairly quickly, and that's almost an extra skink right there. And I love skinks. But, so...
Jeez, don't get started on the skinks.
Yeah, I'm always saying, like, you're paying 12 points per Saurus Warrior, and you're just getting minus one weapon skill, minus one initiative, and then 17 for the Temple Guard, and you're looking at 6 points per... a skink right there. So for the and you need a, you know, a unit of 10 plus Temple Guard. So when you think about it, for what you're getting for the Temple Guard, there's 50 points right there. There's, you know, a small, almost a full unit of skinks. If you can spare 10 more points, you got yourself a unit right there. Or you can go for another unit, maybe another skink priest or whatever. So like I said, do some playtesting, see how they work out for you. If you find that just that small little changes do help you out, then go for them. But their main ability is, you know, being the protectors of the Slan, and if you don't have a Slan yet, I would probably say wait out, if because like I said, a Slan is really nice, but having those Temple Guard with them will help. So try it out, see what happens. As for jungle swarms, I'm going to tell you right now, I have some jungle swarms, and I immediately removed them from my army. They were very, very ineffective, I found. 60 points per swarm. Though the 5 wounds were nice on them, it's just... No, I had them in there. I forget who I was playing. I think it was Orcs and Goblins I was fighting against. And just for that little swarm like that, they did nothing all game. And I had two swarms, because that's what I bought of the blister pack at the time. And I just found zero effectiveness from them. And like I said, after the one game they were retired, I kind of regret buying them. But, yeah. Don't I would pass on the jungle swarms for sure. You can get much better stuff for the point cost instead. So I hope that helps you out. I know I was kind of rambling on about that, but you really, really have to try it. Personally, I find you could just go for some source, go for them for some more source warriors, maybe even some more skinks if you want to, because skinks are great. And pass on the jungle swarms, and hopefully that works so good for you. All right, so we're gonna move on to our next question. This is from Philip. He writes, "Gentlemen, with all the rumors of the upcoming fifth edition of 40K, do you think it'll be a notable upgrade from fourth? And is it something we should be happy about? Great work, guys."
Absolutely.
I have to,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Because if you read through the fourth edition rulebook, it's so vague with the explanations.
Yeah.
It's the reason fifth edition is being pumped out early is the fact that it's such vague that at like events like grand tournaments and events like games days when people are playing, there's too much discrepancy between the rules because this one person's gaming club may interpret it one way, and the other person's gaming club may interpret it another way. So when they play each other, it causes a whole bunch of confusion on who's actually right. So that's really one of the main reasons fifth edition is really being pumped out early. And for newer players, reading fourth edition, you get so lost so quickly. Like I know one of my friends tried to skim through parts of it, and he was just sitting there like, "Okay, I'm so lost. Explain this to me." And he would literally talk to me on the computer every day, asking me about 30, ask me approximately probably around like 5 to 10 questions on about 4 pages of the book.
Yeah. I think it was kind of harder for new players to get in. It was easy for us because we were already existing players of the game from second, third edition and stuff like that. And it was kind of easy to adapt the fourth because it was just changes. That was all. But again, starting the game a whole like a new like that, and it does start some confusion. And I agree. I think fifth edition is going to be a good upgrade. We've already reported on some of the rumors. We have rumors on our website. About what's in the book, and there's also like that the leaked copy on the internet. We've pretty much all seen it, but so some things are really good for that, and some other things they're really really simplifying, and I mean really simplifying. So again, it's another bag of mixed nuts because some of it is really good, and then some of the other stuff makes you wonder why. So. Until we see a final copy in our hands, it's kind of give a final judgment on it. And personally, I think we should be happy about it because, yeah, fourth edition did cause some big problems. But again, with fifth edition coming out, now they got to redo all the books. And one of the big things that's going on, especially on our forums, is the new Space Marine Codex. They have to redo that because the current Space Marine Codex conflicts with the new rules, so it's not working out. And if fifth edition comes out, is this going to conflict with other armies? Like, look how many armies there are out there already for 40K. So,
Well,
yeah, it's.
I think with that, I think it was really how the Space Marines are set up, point cost wise, play style wise, and like the whole chapter trait system. I think those are really the three that are really conflicting with fifth edition.
Yeah. But it's also unit-wise as well because they're saying that there are some Space Marine units that are godlike in 5th edition and some of them that are just completely nerfed. So, yeah. I'd like to see how this is going to turn out.
Yeah, I think really Space Marines are really going to be the only ones truly effective. Because Space Marines, you also remember that Space Marines were not the first army in 5th edition, 4th edition, excuse me. So there are a couple armies before them and after them. I think really the only problem are the armies that were had to redo before them. I think the armies after, such as the Eldar and the Orcs, I think they already kind of pre-planned for it, so they're kind of anticipating that those two books will be fine.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's all clearly
While
thought
other,
out. But.
Well, the other books, like maybe Tau and Space Marines, won't be as clear or won't be as compatible
Yeah.
due to switching roles. I think from what I've heard so far, I'm really excited because apparently the game takes a more logical stance. Like apparently one of the rumors going around is that units can actually run, basically giving every single unit the fleet rule.
Yeah.
And then units that have the rule fleet will get another bonus
Yeah.
with that. So
And one of my
that.
favorites was the and which finally, if this is true, I'm extremely happy because it took them long enough, and that was the tank ramming rule, not tank shock, but able to run over units,
Oh my God, yeah.
which
I
is
sit there, I'm like, okay, my friend was like, okay, I want to take my Lamin Russ and run through your squad of Guardians. Okay, all you did was part the sea of Guardians.
yeah, like
You didn't do anything.
that's the thing, and that was the one thing about tank shock that
I want
I
people under my
never
treads.
that's the one thing I never really did. It was well because
Because it was useless.
well the only thing I ever did with was
Be a rhino or
my
something like
Rhino,
that.
because being a Blood Angel player, having the ability to get a free Rhino for my Death Company, I just it's just a whatever tank. I just have the little Storm Bolter on top. Just whenever, and usually that's the first thing to go on, is so I just have this tank that does nothing. And usually I'll just go around just tank shocking stuff. I really don't care about the Rhino, like it, where it was a free given and it does its job. And I just want to have some fun with it, so I decided to tank shock. But it's just it you tank shock and it doesn't do anything. But having the ability not just to hit a unit and stop in front of it, I want to freaking run over these guys and get them all hunked up in my treads and crush them to death.
Oh yeah,
Like
I want blood splatter everywhere. Like
exactly. And that's what I want.
think about how much fun you could have taking your Land Raider and running over Gaunts.
Like,
Just think of the amount of fun and bloodshed.
yeah, like, currently, as of now, a Baneblade cannot run over Snotlings. But in 5th
Yeah.
edition, you'll be able to do that, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah, so.
I hope that I don't know, something about close combat just doesn't seem right in fourth
Yeah, I
edition.
remember, oh, I remember talking about some of the stuff, the 5th edition close combat stuff seems to, I'm hearing mixed things about that. So, again, until we have final word, I don't want to make any final judgments on anything because a lot is changing constantly.
But as a 40K player, I would definitely say be excited for fifth edition.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason not to be excited about it. It's just it's going to improve the game, hopefully. Though some things may be hurt, they will be fixed over time. All right, so let's move on to our last question here before we move on, Chris.
Hey guys, I'm sure you guys have a vast amount of dice considering this game. What do you guys use to carry your dice in? Also, do you have a lucky die from Svek
Svek Kalik, we'll say.
Kalik? I am extremely sorry if I butchered your name.
It's CVEC. So Svek Kvek. Sorry, we're terribly sorry, but we didn't mean to do that. Yeah, we well, at least I have a lot of dice. I have, oh jeez, I got too many. But yeah, especially for 40K, when you get into those moments where you do need a lot of dice. Especially close combat. What do I use to carry them in? Basically, I have. It's used for organizing, or technically, it's almost like a little mini tackle carrying case. You can use to put your tackle in, or if you want your sewing stuff like threads and all that. And it's about maybe, I don't know, 8 inches wide or whatnot. It's a small little case, and I throw all my dice in that. And I have you can organize it, also organize by color and stuff like that. So I have all my D6s, D20s, all that in there. Do I have a lucky dice? I'm gonna probably say yes. Actually, I kind of have two. The one was from, I don't know how many years ago now, when I went to my first ever Games Workshop when I was, I don't know how many years old. Definitely under 10, probably. And
Way back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
it was definitely, I'm gonna say maybe 11 years ago when I got that my lucky die. It was actually from a Games Workshop I went to, and the guys there were hella nice. And you know, they gave me like this free pamphlet stuff. You know, even though there was free pamphlets at the time, that was everything to me. So after getting that, and he was just showing me the game, and I was looking at one of the dice. It's one of the official Games Workshop dice. It's one of the clear red dice. I still have that dice today, and I use that. And every time I roll on it, whenever I need to, if I need to roll low, I'll roll low. If I need to roll high, I'll roll high. So I only use it for certain instances, like if I have you know, my final armor save on my last wound on my certain character, I'll roll that dice just to save him. And also, too, I got this giant dice, probably about like an inch and a half, about an inch and a half wide on every side. And I don't know what I use that for. I use maybe for like weird armor saves or whatever.
Invulnerable saves, stuff yeah. Like that.
I used to have this really wicked little tiny dice. You know, it's probably about maybe a few millimeters all the way around. And I'd use that to put on bases to count wounds. It was really nice.
Yeah, I have and then, that.
Yeah, then someone stole it, and I got really mad. Or I extremely lost it, but I think it's someone stole it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a fancy tackle carrying case for my dice. I took a Ziploc bag and I kind of just poured all my dice in that.
That works as well.
I have them double bagged now because there's about, I don't know, I'd say probably about 100 dice in there.
Yeah.
So it's not like the big Ziploc bags you can get. It's like those small ones you can barely fit a peanut butter or jelly sandwich in. And I have about 50 dice poured into them and I have them double bagged.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bad. I actually need to consider fixing upgrade that. Do I have a lucky dice? Yeah, I do. I have two, like Steve. One is a chipped, was from an old Monopoly game I found at my aunt's house. Not my aunt's house. We found it in my basement. And it was like the 70s version of Monopoly or something like that. It was just old chipped dice, and I took it by accident, and it rarely fails me. Rarely. It's just the age.
Yeah.
It's gotten all the dices rolled. It's got all the luck rolled out of it. The other one is actually, I don't remember where I found it. I think it was actually at one of the hobby shops, and I accidentally picked it up off the ground or something because one of my dice fell on the ground. I think I picked it up with it and didn't realize it and threw it in my Ziploc bag. And that is, it's this little tiny, like, Space Wolf gray kind of looking colored dice with the little red dots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I found it from, but that never, ever fails me. I use it to roll for turn. Especially when I play against someone I know is going to kick my ass. Because, you know, when you get Eldar versus, you know, Space Marine, Chaos Space Marines that have two squads of Terminators and 1,000 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need first turn to kind of run away from your area. So, yeah, that I use that for armor shaves and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's the story of my dice.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I have a bunch of like colored dice and special dice, stuff like that. I think everyone has their special dice somewhere, regardless of gamer. Everyone has one, so yeah. So it's kind of cool to know. All right, so thank you guys for writing in. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions, comments, or army list submissions, we will, by the way, get to army lists next episode. We just haven't been doing them for these past episodes just to, due to time constraints. We don't want to make you guys listen to us for 2 hours on end. So, if you had any submissions, send them into mwunion@gmail.com. Also, be sure to join us at the Miniatures Wargaming Union, our Games Workshop news site. And you can check us out at mwunion.com. Check out all your news, previews, and other podcasts, such as Podhammer, 40K Radio, and soon coming Forge, which you can check out right on our site there. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and be nice and leave us a review. It helps us out a lot. So, again, that's the end of this episode. I want to apologize if the show seemed kind of sloppy. We are kind of in a rush. Right now, for us, there's a lot going on. We're trying to get a lot of stuff done for the website and preparing for a lot of stuff that's coming up in the future. And, again, life in general, so you know how that is. So we didn't have as much time as we'd like to dedicate towards this show, especially content-wise. So we apologize for that, and we will make up for it. Don't you worry. So until then, we want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time right here on the Jaw Podcast.
The 4th and 5th editions of the game are very similar to each other, but quite different from the 3rd. 5th edition in particular became pejoratively known as Hero Hammer, because of the imbalance between the very powerful heroes, monsters, and wizards of the game, and blocks of troops which existed effectively as cannon fodder. Both editions of the game were sold as box sets containing not only the rule books and a variety of other player aids, but also sufficient plastic miniatures to be able to play the game out of the box. The rules underwent a rewrite compared to 3rd edition, and a completely reworked magic system was produced, which was available as a boxed expansion set. Rather than selecting these spells, they are drawn at random, and the magic phase was based on the play of these cards, making magic a bit of a game within a game. The magic system was further expanded with the Arcane Magic box set, and the magic element of the Chaos box set. The 4th edition was also the first edition to enforce the use of army lists in the form of separate Warhammer army books for separate racial groupings. These books prescribed for each army a limited number of unit choices, specifying limits on the amount of points that could be spent on characters, troops, monsters, and so on. The books also included background on the particular army, illustrations and photographs showing the models that have remained with the game throughout the updates with the rules. The 5th edition also won the Origins Award for Best Fantasy or Sci-Fi Fiction Miniatures Rules of 1996. The magic system was reworked and re-released in December 1996 as a single box covering the magic for all the armies. The magic system was toned down, with the spell casting limited to the player's own turn. The multiple card packs of the Colors of Magic system was replaced by 20 battle magic spell cards, but the color magic spells were in the rulebook for players to use if they wanted. Several box campaign packs were produced. Tears of Isha, for example, gave a campaign for the High Elves and included a card building to assemble. Likewise, the Orc and Goblin themed campaign, Idol of Gork, included card idols of Gork and Mork. The others were Circle of Blood, Grudge of Drong, and Perilous Quest. The 4th edition featured High Elves vs. Goblins. The 5th edition, released in 1996, reintroduced the Bretonian forces, which had been left out of the 4th edition, and reworked the slant into heavily create the Lizardmen armies. The 6th edition was also published in a box with a soft-covered rulebook and miniatures, Orcs and Empire. The rulebook was also available for separate sale, hardcover in the first printing and softcover after that. After the 5th edition, this edition puts the emphasis back on troop movement and combat. Heroes and wizards were still important, but became incapable of winning games in their own right. There was also an all-new magic system based on dice rolling. The current 7th edition rules were released on September 9th, 2006. It is available in two forms, as a single hardback rulebook for established gamers, and a box set complete with over 100 plastic miniatures, dwarfs, and goblins. The Battle for Skulls Pass supplement book, and a softcover rulebook that has less artwork and background material than the hardback version. The smaller rulebook from the box set is approximately half the size of the large book in both size of the cover and page count. The basic rules and advanced rules sections of both books are identical in text, layout, illustrations, credits, page numbering, and ISBN. War Master is a tabletop war game created by Rick Priestley, published by Specialist Games, a division of Games Workshop, and set within the Warhammer Fantasy setting. It is different from Warhammer Fantasy Battles in both appearance and gameplay. It uses smaller 10mm miniatures. Basic troops are on stands, of which typically three make a unit. Generals, heroes, and wizards are mounted individually or within their own retinue. Gameplay focuses on command and control. While magic is used in the game, its effects on the game are limited. The game is designed to focus on the general's ability to command rather than the army's ability to fight. Players of the game say it avoids common criticisms of Games Workshop's Warhammer games that battles are so often decided based on army selection rather than the player's skill in battle. Man of War is now an out-of-print tabletop war game. The game was set in the same realm as Warhammer Fantasy as used as Warhammer Fantasy Battle, and included most of the factions from that setting. Other races from the Warhammer world were not included, either because they were lacking seafaring abilities, such as Wood Elves, or missing from the main factions at the time, such as Ogres and Lizardmen. Man of War dealt with the sea battles of the Warhammer world, each player controlling a fleet of model ships. The game typically used a small number of models, from half a dozen to a dozen models per player, with each model having a corresponding template to record damage, crew levels, and outbreaks of fire, among other bookkeeping activities. In this regard, the game's mechanic provided some limiting factors. Even the most innovations were present, like alternate unit activation. As we get to the end of our retrospective, let's do a rundown of the current 16 active armies in Warhammer. Beasts of Chaos, formerly part of the Chaos Army, also called Beastmen. Bretonnia. Demons of Chaos. Dark Elves. Dogs of War Mercenaries. Dwarves. Empire, also known as the Empire of Man. Hordes of Chaos, also known as Chaos Mortals. High Elves. Lizardmen. Ogre Kingdoms. Orcs and Goblins. Skaven. Tomb Kings, also referred to as the Tomb Kings of Khemri in the 6th edition rulebook, and the Tomb Kings of Nehekara in the supplements and Games Workshop website. Vampire Counts, and Wood Elves. There are 17 races if you also count the Araby Army, which is currently a Warmaster-only race. Besides the current active armies, here's a rundown of races that have been removed from the Warhammer game, and in some cases, completely from the lore. The Amazons. The Arachnids. Chaos Dwarves. Though no longer available as a regular army, they are still a playable race. Faramir. Giants of Albion. Half-Orcs. Hobgoblins. Kislev. Can be used as part of the Empire army, so the rules are still available. Nippon. Norse. Pygmies. Slan, which are now replaced by the Lizardmen. Undead, which are now replaced by Tomb Kings and Vampire Counts. And the Zote. Besides Chaos, they are one of the first Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40k crossover armies. We hope this provided an in-depth look into the history of Warhammer. For a veteran or new players alike, Warhammer is a game that has brought out some of the best moments. If it wasn't for a small group of guys with an idea many years ago while dungeon crawling, the hobby today would be very different. We thank Games Workshop and the many hobbyists who support the hobby and kept it going 25 years strong. We thank you for watching our Warhammer 25th Anniversary Retrospective. From myself and the rest of the Miniatures Wargaming Union, keep those dice rolling.